You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
TMZ, oh my goodness.
I mean, what are we doing here?
I think he's the philosopher of football.
It's great that everyone can give their opinion.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Find me. Find me. I don't care anymore. So drain my bank account.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from the AT&T MLS Studios in Midtown Manhattan. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Charlie Davies, you know him well, number 9, scoring goals, doing his thing. Matt Doyle, no goals, lots of takes. We still appreciate you.
More of a number 10.
More of a 10? You're more of a distributor. What would that make me in this scenario then? More of a, like, I think like a kind of like a tempo setting.
An
deep line.
An 8.
Yeah, central midfielder.
You attack and you defend.
I could get into the box.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're an 8.
It's still a stretch. We all know that's a stretch. Big show coming up for you. With a very productive number 9 in this league. You know him from ESPN Broadcast. Taylor Twellman is going to be here. The interview, which we have already done, so I can brag about it a little bit, is going to be must-listen. Doyle, I think you said it was fire on Twitter?
Yeah, I used an emoji.
Yeah, that's
some
new for you.
Uh-huh.
What makes it, quote-unquote, fire?
Taylor is one of those guys who knows things. He knows things about this league before almost anybody else does, and he could touch on everything from managerial comings and goings to new DPs to
say the names.
Oh, I'm not going to say
no,
the names.
Say it.
No,
Robert
say it.
Lewandowski.
There you go.
You might have thought that was a throwaway on the ESPN broadcast. Taylor says it absolutely was not. Stick around for that. It is coming up. We're going to wrap up MLS Week 7. A lot to talk about there. Minnesota, their home opener at Allianz Field. What a special, special day this was. I had the opportunity to be there. We'll dive into that. Gianluca Busio's got 3 goals. He's still just 16 years old. The Red Bulls had some awkward moments and some moments that they'll want to forget, and we will get into those as well. Barquito! He's got 5. I'm just saying, he's a fourth of the way there. My guarantee was 20. He's got 5, 3 goals, 2 assists.
Good weekend, man.
I'm feeling like this could happen for me. And obviously, we're going to talk Seattle, LA, and the Dynamo, who are getting it done out in the Western Conference. Plus, your mail, including some MLS Game of Thrones equivalents. Let's dive right into the weekend. And we start with the new building in Major League Soccer. Allianz Field opened up on Saturday in St. Paul. It's right smack dab between Minneapolis and St. Paul, right between the Twin Cities. An awesome spot for this thing. And it is absolutely gorgeous. It is goosebump inducing. It is spine tingling. If you're watching on YouTube right now, you can see that I have the scarf given to me by the Dark Clouds. Home sweet Midway. They've been a lot of places, man. They've been at the Nessie. They've been at, you know, NSC to various like high school / small college fields around to a baseball field, I believe, back in the day with the Kicks. I mean, all over the place. And yet Minnesota soccer survived and survived and survived. And finally, guys, finally, I think it's in a position to thrive. I don't know what it was like watching on TV, but I was just
watching on TV. It came through
giddy.
The screen. What a spectacular stadium it is. It kind of blew me away. And I think there was some, you know, it says the Midway, right? And it's named the Midway because it's halfway between Minneapolis and St. Paul. And there was maybe some worry at first that it was too far removed from either to get the kind of crowd involved that you want to see. But I think after 1 week, you kind of put those concerns away, right?
It really looked electric. Could you tell me the difference between the experiences of Minnesota and Cincinnati?
Yeah, so I've had the good fortune, let's call it here, aka I begged for the last 8 months to make sure that I was at both of these events. Because as I was telling people in Minnesota, you know, you sit in this studio and we love it here in New York and we get to talk about the whole league and sum everything up, but there's just nothing quite like being on the ground, getting outside your bubble. And I think about it as having kind of my, you know, my cup filled. You know, sometimes you can be cynical. Sometimes when you're not there, you can kind of forget what this is all about. And ultimately, it's all about the game, the culture behind it, being there, seeing other people, talking to other people, communally experiencing something that we all love. So Cincinnati, I felt like, was a celebration of the present, but more so the future of, like, this is what Cincinnati soccer culture could become. We have this very small spark, a couple years in USL, and it started a fire. And this thing's going to get out of control, and it's going to be incredible, and we're going to build our new stadium, and it's just going to launch and blossom and be this beautiful thing. And you felt that when you were in Cincinnati. Everybody was just like so excited, but it was kind of new.
Because it's like a work in progress.
Yeah, and not everybody really has like the culture side of it picked up. There might be newcomers, and there are newcomers in Minnesota as well. But this felt to me like a celebration of, yes, the present and the future, but very much through the lens of the past. And you saw that in the TIFO, celebrating the Thunder and the Stars and the Kicks and all these teams that came before it. You felt it when you talked to people who said, you know what, I've been a season ticket holder for, you know, 10, 12 years, and there were so many times that I just assumed, I knew in my heart that this was going to be gone. I knew that it was just going to kind of, you know, go away. The flame was going to be extinguished. And to be here today is almost, it feels like a miracle. I'm incredulous at this moment. So Minnesota has 40 years. Minnesota has the stop start. Minnesota has a legion of fans that did it when it wasn't cool, when it wasn't relevant, when no one cared, when Buzz Lagos was busting out his personal credit card and slamming it down and saying, you know what, I got a ton of kids, but I love this game and I believe in it. I'm going to go into debt. And by the way, he wasn't the only one. There were a ton of owners behind that as well that ushered it along. So to me, Saturday felt like this sigh of relief followed by just kind of a swelling of pride for their city, for their club, for their culture, for all the hardship that they've had, for all the times that somebody was pushing the boulder up the mountain and they needed a little bit of help and people showed up, and it was a small community that where everybody knew each other. So you got all those people in the stadium, and it is maybe the best stadium I've ever been in the U.S. because there are a lot of different great ones. We'll talk about that in the mailbag. But this one, in my mind, is the best for a spectator. And I'm not talking about just people in the boxes or in the supporters section, though they have their great spaces. I'm talking about every seat in the house, everything faced one direction, directly to the field of play. It's all about the game. It's all about the game. And I think just after game one, it's going to be entertaining this year. Mm-hmm. It may not always be pretty. It may not always have, like, you know, the I's dotted and the T's crossed and the details just right, but it is going to be entertaining in that stadium. I'm so happy for the people in Minnesota. When I was there 2 years ago, I think they didn't believe it. Well, they can finally believe it because there is permanence. There's an anchor in the ground. There's something that not just to be proud of, but to share with their families and future children and anybody who ends up there who loves the game. When you walk into that stadium, you'll get goosebumps and you'll just kind of have to pinch yourself.
Didn't win the game, though.
Did not win the game. No. 3-3 draw with New York City. It started a little bit awkwardly. The TIFO, again, great idea, but it was ripping halfway up. I mean, that was a lot of
fabric. I thought they scrambled well,
yeah,
actually.
I thought so,
too. They kind of, you know.
They scrambled better than the Loons defense did often.
Correct.
Certainly better than NYCFC's defense. I mean, look, we can celebrate this, and you should go to the Allianz Field because it is that amazing, but Minnesota still have some real question marks. They wanted Wonderwall. We all wanted Wonderwall. That was the missing ingredient in this game, was that finale, that 3 points.
Your Midwest
celebration
bias showing through.
Yep.
Well, everybody but NYCFC. Obviously, they did not want Wonderwall.
No, I wanted to see it as well. Everyone come together and see how powerful that would be.
It would have been. Oof. It would have been. So what's the deal with these two teams? Because my word for it was really, really gappy. The whole game, It just felt like everything was pulled apart. Nobody quite knew where to be. And one simple pass was going to break them down.
That's about it, right?
Yeah.
If you looked at the first couple of goals that Minnesota scored, it was NYCFC bringing their back line way up to midfield. And like, if you lose a second ball in that situation and you have Ronald Matarrita at left back and he doesn't defend, going against Ethan Finley, who's just going to run that offside line, you're giving up three or four breakaways inside the first 15 minutes, and that's exactly what happened. And on the other side, I don't know with Minnesota United. I kind of want to watch a replay of the game again because they didn't look like the same team that had won three of the previous five games. And you would expect in that situation, and Charlie and I have been banging on this point all weekend, you would expect in that situation the team with Ozzy Alonso and Ike Opara, and let's face it, Michael Boxall and Francisco Calvo are veteran internationals and they're veteran MLS players at this point. Jan Gregoric is a DP. You would expect a team with that lineup to know how to lock down a lead. And they had an early lead, and they had a late lead, and they didn't do it.
And you brought up the point. You score 3 goals at home. That better be enough to win.
Yeah.
Has to be enough.
Darwin Quintero, what he can do. What I've seen from this team is inconsistency. When they played in New England and they lost to the New England Revolution, I was like, this is not the team I've been watching or to start the season.
Yeah.
And then they followed up with a good win after that. So for me, it's just up and down. It's too inconsistent. You need to bring it every single game and have that identity and the style of play. And they haven't sorted that out yet.
I really think they're working toward that, but they haven't had it the last 2 years. They haven't had a winning culture. They haven't been consistent in any way other than being poor defensively. It's going to take some time, and I still wonder if they have the direction right and they have all the pieces right, because they did make a lot of changes. Ike comes in, Ozzie comes in, Grey Goose comes in. They've got to try with all the rest of the pieces there and Adrian Heath to build a winning culture. And in this game, a winning culture wins this game. It steps on New York's throat. Mm-hmm. It finishes it off. It doesn't stretch itself in moments like they did in this game and have giveaways like they did. There's a lot of questions. How do they become a playoff team is the biggest one, because Allianz Field deserves a playoff team. How does it change? What would you do? How would you eliminate that gappiness and inconsistency? How is that done?
Well, that's the benefit of playing these games at this stage in the season is you learn from it. You have to learn from it. You have guys in the locker room like Ozzie Alonso, and Ike Opara, who have both won and have been a part of winning cultures, saying, look, when we get at this point in this stage in the game and we have the lead, we lock it down. We think defend first. If you defend first, you're tough on set pieces, you're going to come out with the victory. And then when teams are coming forward like that and you're inviting them up, you're inviting them to attack you, and you hit them on the counter with Darwin Quintero and Ethan Finley, guess what? That's when you get up that you get that, you know, insurance goal, and you win those games at home. And then Allianz Fields becomes a fortress. And teams going in there go, man, if we come in here and we get a point, that's a victory for us.
In some ways, they played off the crowd, I think, in that sense. There was just so much emotion in it that you couldn't help but want to be the guy that scores the goal. You couldn't help if you're Francisco Calvo rushing forward.
Did I hear boos for the home team from that crowd in like the 18th, 20th minute? Like, I think after the second NYCFC goal, like I was surprised by that. It sounded like that coming through the broadcast when Minnesota United went down 2-0. I think maybe the
2-1, I think it was.
2-1, yeah, 2-1 rather, 2-1. Yeah. I think maybe the crowd got the home team jittery and nervous.
It might have. I did not hear those, but I was also just so
you were in the brew hall.
After the game, I was in the brew hall, but I was so stuck in. I do remember those goals and people looking around, and I think there was an element of like, oh, this again?
Yeah.
Like, knowing that was the deal. Can we just quickly, before we move on and talk Gianluca Busio and BWP and Kaku, et cetera, et cetera. Sean John and the own goal?
Mm-hmm.
Man.
I really feel for him.
Oh, man. I talked to him on the field after the game, and it was, what can you say? I mean, he was just like, it's cruel. It's a cruel game.
When you look at a keeper and their improvement, he's always been a phenomenal goalkeeper when it comes to shot stopping. Just shot stopping ability, being athletic, getting from, you know, post to post. Great. His feet were always a major issue, concern. And he's worked so hard, tirelessly, at developing that. Especially, I think you have to give credit to Patrick Vieira. But he really developed where he could play, start to play now and feel comfortable using his feet. And then you have a mistake, what happens to a lot of people. Fortunate part for players in the field. You can make those mistakes and it's not going to go in the back of your net. For a goalkeeper, you make a major mistake like that, it's going to play a lot of mind games with you here on out. So when he gets back passes, he's always thinking, I just got to get it out. I just got to get it out. And you don't want to see that. You hope that, you know, he's going to stay strong and move on.
We will see. We will see. NYCFC still do not have a win. We're going to talk about that with Taylor Twellman here in just a little bit. Sporting Kansas City didn't get a win, but Gianluca Busio got a goal. He now has 3 this season, Doyle.
Mm-hmm.
He's 16 years old. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really cool. What makes him special? I have a lot of people hitting me up just saying, you know, I'm not watching KC that much, so I don't know.
Right.
Help them out. What makes this kid so special?
He understands how to fit into the game as the game is happening around him. With a lot of our best young players, guys who have that little bit of skill. They pop off the screen. Once they're off the ball, they have no idea what they're doing. It's a hard thing to learn. And I think that is where the gap is for most young playmakers. Now, Boosie as a playmaker, I haven't been wowed by him on the ball, but he understands the pace and the geometry of the game, which is why he's always in the right place at the right time. And it's not just popping up for those types of goals that he scored against the Red Bulls. But it's also, if you watch him in possession, he doesn't do anything spectacular, but he's always available. And just being available and being the guy who allows a sequence of possession to continue, those are some pretty good building blocks for a 16-year-old. If you could be a part of the game but not control it, because let's face it, no team in MLS is going to defer to a 16-year-old playmaker, you're going to get minutes. And he's making the most of it right now. And it's helping Sporting Kansas City get points.
I love him on that little half turn, but mostly because he doesn't overcomplicate it. Like you said, it is two touches. It's receive the ball, get your head up, look, find the next man, keep it moving. 16-year-old in the locker room, scoring goals, getting a lot of publicity, starting his rise, Charlie. As a veteran, what are you looking for from that kid? How does he ingratiate himself in with the rest of the team?
Well, I think the benefit for him is the guys in the locker room. When you have Graham Zuzi, Beisler, Johnny Russell,
Roger Espinoza,
all guys who have done it for a long time, to keep him level-headed and hold him accountable and let him know, hey, you haven't done anything yet. You're just getting started. The work is just beginning. And in talking to a lot of these players, they said this kid really has that maturity level that's well beyond his years. He comes in, he understands, okay, if I'm starting, this is my responsibility. If I'm a substitute, this is my responsibility, and I'm all about it. His awareness on the field, he knows where guys are before he gets the ball. He thinks ahead of the play, which is rare for someone at that age and that speed of play. So when you look at this kid, it's like equivalent of like when you were looking at a young Juan Mata. Is he going to stand out to you? Probably not. You know, you say, okay, this kid's pretty good on the ball, but you're not like he's going to be a world superstar. But if he continues to progress, he has a high ceiling.
Sky's the limit. Sky is absolutely the limit. Now, he got the tying goal in this game at home, which Kansas City can't be happy about because they want to get 3 points at Sporting Park. The Red Bulls almost pulled it off. It's been a rough season for them so far. It got even rougher in stoppage time. Kaku sent off for the red card, which I'm sure you've already seen. He kicks the ball, and again, you've already seen it. So I don't think I have to explain to you what happens here. He's sent off for violent conduct, which was absolutely the right call by Robert Sabiga. Go check out Instant Replay for more on that. We'll keep our eyes on that as it goes forward. But I thought the most interesting moment of this game, at least from a Red Bulls perspective, came in the second half. Marisa Pillow for FS1 is interviewing Chris Armas, who has taken off BWP, his striker of years and years and years, basically the foundational member of this squad. And he's put on Brian White, who scores a goal. And with BWP behind him, not looking very happy, by the way, which he shouldn't be, taken off early.
What player is happy?
Yeah, Armas has to explain why he made the decision. And he says, look, BWP does a lot of work off the ball, so we thought that Brian White would be the guy here. But this is, to me, and maybe I'm wrong, feels like a kind of a big moment within the team, Doyle. Am I wrong about that?
It feels like a big moment, yeah. Maybe it should have happened sooner. BWP has one goal in his last 17 appearances. And I know he's a legend. He is arguably the best regular season goal scorer in MLS history. And you want to give a guy like that as much time as he needs to work his way out of the funk. But he hasn't done it. It's been months and months and months, and he has not looked like BWP. And if Brian White has a good week of practice, and Brian White was very good in limited minutes last year with the Red Bulls and was excellent in more minutes, obviously, in USL, the Red Bulls have a pipeline that they believe in. They say we can get a talent like Aaron Long and turn him into a top-tier MLS center back. And they clearly believe Brian White, we have a talent in him. We believe in our ability to turn him into an MLS goal scorer. And sooner or later, if you're the coach, you have to hold your veterans accountable for underperforming. Bradley Wright Phillips underperformed at the start of this season. Sooner or later, you go to the bench.
And I touched a little bit on it in Match Day Central. Is you have an icon for the club, and he's 34 years old now. And it feels like, all right, you're losing a step here, you're losing a step there. He had 20 goals last year. This isn't a guy who had 4 or 5 or 10 goals.
Yeah, so it's not too many steps.
It's not too many steps, but your minutes are going to decrease. And how do you have those conversations to still have him engaged and still have him be positive around the team? Because if you have an icon that is not happy at the club and is giving off this negative perception of his involvement on the field and not happy with his playing time, it's going to make things a lot tougher when you couple that with Kaku and the way they haven't played this year and how they haven't gotten points. So it's going to be difficult how you integrate that. Bradley Wright Phillips, look, you're not going to play as much as you did. And I'm going to push you and challenge you to rise above it and score when you do get the opportunity. Because maybe you've been a little bit secure with your position. And now you're 34. You're on the back end of your career. All right, let's see what you got left. Let me see how much you can push. And if you don't, these guys who are younger are hungry. Brian White is one of those kids who he sees an opportunity, he's training hard, and now he gets his first appearance and he bangs one in. He's only going to grow with confidence. And his time is only going to get, and the coach is only going to give him more time. So it's something to look after.
It's a huge challenge for Chris Armas.
It's a challenge for BWP because it happens to everybody. You eventually become a guy who's better off the bench. And
that just sounds wrong.
Yeah, I don't even know if that's think that's necessarily true now. Mm. But I think it was the right time on
How
the road in
you
this
give
situation.
Him? He has effectively played half a season and has scored one goal, and that's your number 9. And I get it. He's an icon. Charlie's face last night, by the way. We all saw BWP's face on the broadcast. Charlie had the same face.
Oh my God. It was so odd. The whole thing was just like kind of painful to me as Armas is trying to inch away from the interview because he's like, I know BWP's right behind me. I know what question you're going to ask here. It has to be that question. Mm-hmm. I took him off and Brian White scored. I mean, it was just like, I was cringing inside the whole time.
Because it's a game where you need a result. And you're taking off your goal scorer for an unproven player. That's when it really hits home. I think that's when it hit home for BWP. Like, oh, it's not, you know, I'm not used to getting my
for sure
90 minutes every game. So this is where I'm like, okay, is this how going to be the rest of the season? Or do I just have an off game and try and get back into the starting lineup?
A lot to look at there. We'll see what happens with Chris Armas, and his future lineups here. BWP, his track record is unimpeachable. The man scores goals, but look, the stats, I didn't know that stat, man. I didn't know it had been one goal in 17 games. So it's time for the Red Bulls to figure it out. By the way, what precipitates that is results. If they were getting results and that off-the-ball work was resulting in goals and they were winning and it was all good, this probably doesn't happen.
Yeah, nobody's complaining about LAFC center forwards because they're setting up plays for the wingers.
But that's the trouble. That's the trouble. Atlanta, there have been some questions too, but you go to New England and you get 2-0 win and Ezekiel Barco looks like the player you spent $15 million for and everybody's just a little bit happier. I mentioned my guarantee. I'm feeling a lot better after 2 goals and the bender of the season, perhaps, by Barco. Off that left flank.
Looked like a right-footed Carlos Vela.
Oh, my God. That was unbelievable.
I had the perfect viewpoint, and this thing just curled last second. Like, it was like bend it like Beckham.
Yeah.
And I thought, this guy's got some.
The pace, the bend, beautiful. Is this something to jump off of? I mean, it has to be. This is the first win of the season for Atlanta.
I'll say for Barco in particular, he looks a lot more confident this season, and that was true in continental play against Herediano in Monterrey as well, which is for whatever reason, he did not fit in last year. And by the end of the season, he was a human victory cigar. This year, I mean, he wasn't starting this game. He only came on because Remedy went out with a concussion. So he had this opportunity and he took it. And the hope is obviously that he can do this from the kick next weekend, and hopefully he'll get that opportunity. As for what it means for Atlanta United as a whole, obviously if he's playing well, they'll probably be playing better. But we've seen this team putting one good performance before this all year, It was a second leg against Herediano. They crushed them 4-0. And everybody thought, okay, Atlanta's back. They figured it out. It was a rough couple of weeks, but, you know, this team's going to be okay. And then Frank DeVore kept tinkering. Guys regressed. None of it happened. They just put in a good performance against New England. And New England side's that's not great right now. They're struggling. Do I trust that this is an indication of what's to come for Atlanta? Uh-uh. I do not. Do it next week against Dallas, then we can talk.
All right. That's pretty pointed. It's fair, though. I think it's completely fair. Some other results to call out from the weekend. Look, congratulations to the Dynamo. Another win. We'll talk about them in the mailbag. They knock off the San Jose Earthquakes 2-1. Dallas, 2-1 winners against Portland. There was a controversial call in second half stoppage
time.
Two of them. A handball and then a maybe penalty on Paxton Pomykal and Bill Tuilloma. Instant replay is going to be your spot for that. We're not going to waste airtime digging into referee decisions on here. DC go to Colorado, who are still winless. 3-2 win for them. Congratulations there. LA 2-0 over Philly. And Montreal with the win against Columbus. A nice win for them at home to start the year. I'm going to finish here before we get to Taylor Twellman, which, again, is must-listen stuff. LAFC and Seattle. I think right now, easily the top tier of this league. Form, results, individual performances, coaching, wrap it all up. I think they're top of the heap. So, prognostication a little bit. You have to bet on who gets more trophies this year. Forget about, oh, we did really well in the standings. Oh, man, we made a nice run. We were really prepared before the playoffs. Trophies, actual trophies in the cabinet. Who would you say is better equipped to get more?
LAFC for me.
And why is that?
Carlos Vela, Bob Bradley, the system, the players that they have at their disposal. As long as there's no major injuries, I feel like this team is destined for more trophies.
It does feel a little bit like destiny. The way they've kind of built to this season. Last year was good, but they kind of felt like they knew that this was it. Mark Anthony Kay coming back, being the player that he is. Carlos Vela having the fire lit underneath him and performing. Walker Zimmerman.
Rossi has been much better this year.
He absolutely has been. Atuesta has been a stud. I mean, they're not firing on all cylinders either. Lee Wynn really hasn't played much of a role. Yeah. Horta obviously hasn't played much of a role.
I mean, I guaranteed that they would win a trophy this season before the start of the year. I still think that they'll get the supporter shield.
Feels like there's a but here.
Mm-hmm.
I trust Seattle's defense more. And I think in the end, I that makes them more equipped to win more trophies in Weeby's.
How many would you, if you're just out here, again, you're probably.
I don't think, I would be surprised if either of these teams win more than a single trophy, just because the Western Conference, the top of the Western Conference, is a meat grinder. If it's not these two teams, then it's the Galaxy, then it's Sporting Kansas City, and I know they've just had a rough week, but we've seen what Sporting Kansas City can do
for sure
when they're rested and they have all those guys clicking. I think Houston's on the come up, though questionable if they can't hold on
to Elise.
I'd put
DC over them.
That's fair, but I'm just saying, strictly in the Western Conference, those teams are going to cannibalize each other. It's going to make it tougher to be a Toronto FC 2017-style juggernaut.
Right now, both of these teams, LAFC and Seattle, are 4-0 at home. Mm-hmm. 12 points from 12. They've done well on the road as well. They haven't lost. It's a pretty good start to the season.
It's a pretty good start to the season.
compared to Seattle's start last year.
They'll take this, no doubt about it. All right, time to talk to Taylor Twellman. He is on the line now.
What's going on, boys? How are you?
We're doing good. I know that we were both in Minnesota this weekend, but I still feel a little bit hard done by that. I wasn't able to get a drink with you. Didn't give me the time of day, man.
Yeah, dude, you know the drill. Once we're in public, I want you to lose my number. Don't recognize me. Don't say anything to me. That's only when I'm in your building that we can talk.
Yeah, it's a good point. We'll get you on Minnesota in a second because I know it means something to you and your family. But I want to start you with St. Louis. St. Louis and Sacramento, big news in Northern California for their stadium deal. It seems neck and neck for spot 28 right now. In your mind, who's got the lead on this expansion spot, and what does it mean for the other city? Could both conceivably get in?
Well, on SportsCenter before the season started, 2019, we sat down with Don Garber, and that was literally my first question. Is there, in mid-April, when the Board of Governors and everyone meets, is there going to be that option presented, the fact that maybe you guys need to look at both markets, because what we've seen in the expansion race is that when they listed the top 10 expansion cities, what was it, 8-9 years ago, Cincinnati and Nashville weren't even on the radar. And at that time, 1A, 1B was San Diego and St. Louis. Now, St. Louis has had a roundabout way of getting there, but here we are in 2019, and St. Louis has presented a very compelling, privately financed stadium that is in downtown, where you guys all know my history with that city, but it's also a city where there's very few cities in our country where soccer's at the heartbeat of the city. St. Louis is one of those. Now, to go back to the 10 years ago when the expansion list came out, Sacramento was also right in the mix. They've been there from the beginning. They've checked all the boxes. But there's always been this little bit of a wrinkle on whether or not that market is, quote-unquote, necessary for the media's, for the global brand of Major League Soccer. And I think that's always been a question. The second part of Sacramento is, do they have enough big money behind them? They do now. I think this is going to be a very tight race. The question will be, Weeby, is both will not get in now. Both will not. However, which of those cities has to come in now, and which of those cities could you say to them, just wait, because we all know this isn't stopping at 28. I think it's going to end up at 32. That's the biggest question, and I think when the Board of Governors get together, that's going to be the number one question. Which one of these markets can we speak to and say, just wait for the next round?
A lot of pieces in that puzzle. We'll have to pay close attention, of course, at Taylor Twellman on Twitter. If you want to get Taylor's take on any of that, you were, of course, in Minnesota. Tim Twellman, your father, played in Minnesota in the early days for the Minnesota Kicks. That stadium gave me goosebumps before I even walked into it, Taylor. I wonder what it meant to you, what it meant to your family, and what you think it means to Minnesota soccer.
I probably had 200 text messages from Kicks alumni, all reaching out through my father. I said it on the opening of the show. Weeby, I think for that community, I don't think people understand. You know, for us in Major League Soccer, we didn't know about Minnesota, but I did. I was born there. I would have been raised there if the Minnesota Kicks hadn't folded. It's a soccer community from 1976 that has supported it through all the bumps and bruises that they've gone through, whether it's the Strikers, the Stars, Minnesota United, Minnesota Kicks, whatever it may be. But you were there, and the best way to describe this is, and I've had, you know, whether it was the New York City players, whether it was the Minnesota United players, it's a better stadium than LAFC. And the reason why is the entire thing is enclosed. People don't understand what that roof and the magnitude of that roof and what it did to all those seats now being perfect for any sight line in that stadium. The entire thing is built for the sport of soccer. And LAFC did something very similar to that. But you guys have been to LAFC. When you look in that corner right next to the supporters' wall, it's open. They didn't do that in Minnesota, and that is the little bit extra that's going to go a long way. The stadium's unbelievable.
Tim, your dad, did you get a text from him? Did you get a call from him? Did you fly him out for the game? Was he watching?
FaceTime about 16 times the day before when it was snowing and we were doing SportsCenter. He couldn't come up. He came up for the inaugural game. The snow game for Minnesota United, Atlanta United, that was an absolute disaster for the home team. But there was about three or four Kicks alumni that reached out that are local still. But the FaceTime, watched the game. You know, he's put out some Facebook posts saying the old Met baseball stadium with 30,000 people going to the game, it's a lot different now, and he wishes he was still playing.
One person who was at the game, Brian Marwood, one of the chief executives with City Football Group, obviously there to celebrate the opening of a new stadium and maybe do a little recon on that. Was he there primarily for the stadium, or are there other things going on in the Bronx, maybe related to the coaching issue right now? Little of both for Brian Marwood?
It's an interesting question, Matt. I think for me it was 99% looking at the team and 1% seeing the stadium. The entire front office in New York City was there. They were there for about 2 days. They did their, you know, studies, and I think there's a massive part of them I felt bad for to a certain extent, because they looked at that. Imagine that stadium in the Bronx where it's 25,000, you're talking about a completely different level. But Brian Warwood, in particular, was strictly there to assess the team. He's literally the man in charge for all the satellite clubs for Manchester City Football Club. So whether it's China, whether it's, you know, Melbourne, wherever those teams are, New York City, wherever you may be, Spain, he's in charge, and I think he's assessing the situation, and rightfully so. Think about it. Domé Torrent, only 4 wins now in his last 22 games. He's played 27 different lineups in 28 games, and we all know injuries can be part of that, but that's not part of the equation with New York City. I think Brian Marwood's doing his due diligence, and that's one to watch for me. That's a situation. I said it before the season started, and I said it 24 or 48 hours ago. I think Domé Torrent in that situation is one to watch over the next 2 to 3 weeks.
New York City, one of a couple winless teams right now. You got Colorado, Portland, Vancouver among those out west. Who's in the most trouble? Which is the most concerning?
Portland. Portland for me. Because, look, we're talking. Portland's the most disappointing to me because of the way they handled last season, the way they played under Giovanni Savarese. I'm not surprised that Colorado is winless. I'm not really surprised in the sense that they've struggled even with the amount of players and new players that they've come in. But my goodness, guys, like New York City, if you look at their game against Minnesota United, they were arguably the better team. So the right coach, and maybe Domé figures it out, and maybe he is the right coach and he actually does figure it out. I don't know. That remains to be seen. But I'm not worried about them. I'm worried about Portland because Portland, to me, that team looks completely a shell of themselves from last year. But then I also raised the question, did Mara Polson and that ownership group, did he look at it and say, we're building a brand-new stadium. We've put this expansion into the stadium so we can't really go out and get players. Guys, they don't really have any reinforcements. So Portland, for me, is the most surprising and the most disappointing.
And I know you talked about a shell of themselves compared to last season. Defending MLS Cup champs, Atlanta United were winless up until Saturday night. Do you think the problems are fixed now? Is it the monkey finally off their backs and now they're going to move forward, or are we still going to see them struggle?
I don't think you'll see Atlanta struggle the way they did at the beginning part of the year, but I think the question still should be had and the discussion should still be had on whether or not Frank DeBoer understands what he has and how to make the most of it. I still think there is a style and system conflict with how Frank DeBoer looks at that team and assesses that team with how they want to play. But I think, guys, the one concern for Atlanta United is this, is Miguel Almiron got them out of a lot of trouble because he was arguably the fastest player with the ball. And when you wanted to play that way, the way Atlanta United did under Tata, that's fine. You go out and get PT Martinez, the guy's an absolute stud, South American reigning player of the year. MLS has never had that in the prime of his career, and yet you're playing him in a wide area. So if Frank DeBoer understands the best way to get the most out of him, and then Barco scores goals the way he did against New England, then I just don't think Atlanta's going to struggle all season long. I really don't. And it wouldn't surprise me whatsoever if they go on a run.
What is going on in the East? You have the top three teams from last year all below the playoff line. Is this going to be a free-for-all? You see D.C. is kind of sorting themselves out at the top of the table, and then Toronto following them. Other than that, it's pretty open. What do you see from your angle?
It's always open. I mean, what is this, April 19th? Right, so or April
15th, yeah,
tax
yeah.
day, brother.
15th, right there you go. But yeah, it is. It's actually Boston Marathon Day. In Major League Soccer, I don't assess anything for the playoffs, even though this year's a little different. Until right around mid July, early August, because that's when you start to see teams go on runs, and we've seen it. Seattle Sounders have proven that theory time and time again over the last 3 years. It doesn't matter how you start, it matters how you finish. However, all four of us know on this podcast right now, in this interview, that what does it come down to? Now there's only one, you only get one game and the higher seed hosts it. So it may pick up a little sooner, but to ask me what I see out of the Eastern Conference right now, injuries are a massive part. DC United may look like a team that's going to be there. Columbus looks like a team. But what if DC United loses Lucho Acosta because they can't sign him to a new deal? you know, the summer signings, the way the schedule's set up in Major League Soccer, that's always the X factor. So for me to assess that, no, but a couple surprises, yeah, obviously Atlanta, but Columbus, you know, give Caleb Porter a ton of credit. We criticize Frank DeBoer for how he's handled the change. Caleb Porter's been spot on, and that team looks, you know, even though they lost him to a Montreal team that they should beat, you're still in the thick of things, which is interesting for Columbus's perspective.
So it is going to take some time to figure out the East. It hasn't taken much time to figure out CONCACAF Champions League, and that is disappointment is the free space.
Yes,
once again, year after year, it seems like MLS is aiming at a moving target. What Monterey and Tigres have done over the past couple years, in particular, going out and getting players like Gignac and Maxi Mesa, and these are teams with $65, $70 million player budgets. Is it as simple for MLS? Is it as simple as just going out and spending more money?
I don't know, Matt, because then I look at it and say, well, wait a minute here. How many of these TAM signings have been spot on?
Right, right.
Right, so it's one thing to have the method and the resources to spend that money, but then you got to also be sure you've done your enough scouting and you know who you're signing. Monterey, in MLS's rosters and regulation rules, they would have 11 designated players and 8 TAM players.
Peter
Vermees said there's 12. Now, he and I had a good discussion on it. I think either way, 11, 12. You guys follow where I'm going here.
Yeah.
That's 19 maximum salary players. 19. And so the league, I've said this from the beginning, I've said it for the last, Matt, you've heard me say it. Weeby, you just started to listen to me to keep pounding, pulling the string and pounding the drum. There's two things that have to change. One, the schedule's very difficult. I don't care how you look at it, but when Monterey played Atlanta, Monterey had played, I think if I'm not mistaken, 10 competitive games before Atlanta played them. 10. So my analogy is this. That's running the 100-yard dash, and you're telling your opponents you get 15 to 20-yard head start. Okay, that's one. Two, most importantly, you're trying to win an open market competition while having roster rules and regulations for your teams. That's extremely difficult. That's extremely difficult, and there's going to be one-offs. Ajax just beat Real Madrid, but that doesn't mean that the Dutch league is better than La Liga. It just doesn't, right? But you're going to have one-offs. So Toronto, if they won the last year, okay, great. But that doesn't mean MLS is better than Liga MX. Does that make any sense? So consistently, if you want to be in the conversation for a top league in the world, you have to be the top league in your region. And I just think Liga MX is still further along than Major League Soccer, which is why 2019 CBA discussion is the most important in league history, because the owners, 5, 6 of them, that want to take the training wheels off and let it go, if they win that internal debate, guys, then you're talking about some real growth, because you're also going to say, not only are we getting a better quality product in Major League Soccer because more money is being spent, but more importantly, you're actually taking a dent out of your number one competitor in Liga MX.
Carlos Vela is in phenomenal form. Kalen Carr says he's the best in MLS. Do you agree with him?
Right now, LAFC is the best team, so it'd be hard for me not to say that their best player isn't the best. Yes, absolutely. I this conversation about whether Carlos Vela is playing the best in his career, you know, that's always a weird discussion to be had, because, by the way, Zlatan's still scoring goals for fun. Is he in the best form of his career right now? It's apples to oranges when you're trying to compare different leagues, different times, but the way Bob Bradley has pushed the button, and anyone that wants to deny that is either just not wanting to actually read the tea leaves or whatnot. But Bob Bradley said after they lost to RSL in the playoffs, we need a little more from Carlos. You don't think Carlos heard that? You don't think Carlos understood it and Bob got it out of him? But LAFC is playing extremely well. It's hard for me to argue that Carlos Vela is not the best player in the league right now.
I love watching him play. I love what he's doing for my fantasy team. Not going to lie about that either. Zlatan the same.
About your fantasy team.
Hey, man.
You know that, right?
Hey, I'm just trying to keep myself on track, all right, Taylor? I've given up the last couple years. If I keep talking about it, I'll be accountable. That's the way this works, okay?
Okay, got it.
Speaking of accountability, well, I don't know. We'll see how you interpret this. you were on this show, the first one we did on video. It was awesome. You were like, look, watch out for Chicharito in the summer. He could be on the way. Then you were on ESPN at halftime, and everybody looks forward to your rants and ravings and predictions, and you threw out another name, Lewandowski. And I was like, oh, what's that? I usually don't think Taylor says these things unless he knows something or is hearing something or has an inkling. Robert Lewandowski and the Chicago Fire. Is there a credible link here? Should we keep an eye on this?
I'd keep an eye on Robert Lewandowski in Major League Soccer. Yeah.
Ooh.
Now, part of my, you know, was it a rant? Yeah, it was, but it was also a real exciting part for me because when the Minnesota Kicks folded, my dad went to the Chicago Sting, and Chicago's where my brother was born, and we lived there for 4 years. That is a massive, massive soccer market. If you get yourself out of Bridgeview and you get yourself to Soldier Field, I know there is an internal debate right now whether or not Soldier Field can be the answer and not the Bridge, and I unequivocally disagree with that. However, if you want to be that ray of hope and you want to reintroduce yourself to the city of Chicago and that sports land, then you go get Chicharito or you go get Robert Lewandowski or you go get both. And you sell out Soldier
Field.
Don't do that.
Don't throw that out there.
Because if you do that and you're at 50,000 a game or you're selling out Soldier Field, whatever that number is, I think it's like, because we played Gold Cup final there, I think it's just under 70. And you do that for 3-4 years, it gives you leverage when then you want to buy that land close to where you need to buy it instead of doing what you did at Bridgeview. Lewandowski, after the European Championships in 2020, I'll just tell you guys, keep an eye on him. For Major League Soccer.
Woo!
Yeah, like it.
That was fire.
Mm. Yeah.
Gets, you know, something in my belly here
right now.
Unintended
there, too.
Yeah, exactly.
But let me ask you guys a question. You get one of those two guys, who do you take if you're the Chicago Fire?
You take Lewandowski. And I understand that Chicago has the second largest Mexican-American population after Los Angeles. It's a huge market for Chicharito. Chicharito's a great player, arguably the best, well, second best striker in the history of the region.
But Lewandowski's an assassin.
Lewandowski's literally one of the top five strikers in the world right now. He's still in his prime. He would be coming from Bayern Munich and could go to almost any club in the world. If you have a chance to get that player, you get that player.
That feels safe to me. I mean, if you can get both, you do both, right?
Yeah,
you do both. But when you're talking about business, though, from a business sense, Chicharito, think about the jerseys.
Hey, I get it, man, but that Polish community is going to come out in force as well. Transfer window still open, Taylor? So that's 2020. That's post-European championships. A lot of teams still chatter in Toronto FC, says they want a winger to stretch the field.
New England.
Tam is available. Yep, DPs. Anything coming here in this primary transfer window, or is it going to be all quiet?
That's a good one. I think it's anything of substance. I think it may be quiet. You know, Aaron Robbins sniffing around. He's reaching out through his agent. He's a free transfer. He's a player that has real interest of Major League Soccer and wants to come here. Obviously, he reached out to Toronto first, and that's why I, you know, made sure that rumor was out there. But Toronto, you know, politely declined, obviously finances and all that stuff being a part of that reason, but I don't think they're interested either. But if you're looking at a name like that, Robin's on a free transfer, so keep an eye on that because he wants to come to Major League Soccer. It's just a matter of where. But the DP situation in New England, listen, in the last 72 hours, Theo Walcott's name has been basically linked to Major League Soccer. Andy Carroll's name has been linked to Major League Soccer. And all I've heard is those are not the two DPs coming to New England. I'm not sure how I read into that situation, and that one's going to be very, very interesting when you guys asked me earlier about the disconnect. If you talk about a DP to the level that you have now, then you raise expectations, that could be a disappointment in New England if the fans and supporters look at that and say, wait, what?
Yeah,
spoke to the fans as far as like, you know what, we're gonna bring in this massive DP, so everyone's got their expectations
on.
Wait.
He's
gonna be the savior.
Yeah.
You're setting yourself up for disappointment if it's not gonna be the guy that everyone's like, okay, MLS Cup, here we come.
Yeah. Hey, but look, the Jesse Marsh has been building up to something. It finally happened, yeah. Doyle. You made a prediction on that, didn't you?
Did I? I don't even remember.
I don't know. I thought you said we went. Like, watch out for him in Salzburg. And now, Taylor, here we are.
I'm so smart.
Yeah, the announcement is here. Jesse Marsh to Salzburg. this made sense on a lot of fronts, and it makes sense for Jesse, and it also explains why he made the decision that he made.
Yeah, completely. I think it validates the decision to all the New York Red Bull fans and even the U.S. men's national team fans of why he would leave that job and go be an assistant at Leipzig. You know, I have a ton of respect for Jesse. I did as a competitor playing against him, even though he used to run his mouth way too much, and I tell him to shut up about 100 times. So that's besides the point. But what he's done as a coach, the sense of humility he has shown in learning and what he's done in Leipzig. I've stayed in touch with Jesse. He's been very open about things he's learned, things he's gained. And this was, as Doyle said it, like you said, Weeby, right? Last year, this is where he was going to go. This was always part of the plan. But you never know, because European soccer and European football, the way it goes, a lot can change in the blink of an eye. So until Jesse and this announcement came to fruition, you didn't know. Jesse could have been over there, and then all of a sudden he's the Leipzig assistant for 3-4 years and with the plan of not going to Salzburg. But this is about a coach in their system and in their hierarchy learning the European way. I don't think Red Bull Salzburg will be the last step for Jesse Marsh.
All right, man. I didn't get to chat with you in Minnesota, but I kind of pulled it all out of you here, huh?
Yeah, you did, and with no alcohol, which is amazing.
All right, Taylor. Enjoy the marathon, man. We'll be watching on ESPN, of course. You can follow him at Taylor Twelman on Twitter for all the gyms right there. Enjoy your day, man.
Cheers, brother.
All right, boys.
Cheers.
Big thanks to Taylor for coming on. I mean, woo! Lewandowski, Chicago Fire, Chicharito, double it up.
Double it up.
Man, that'll get you going, that interview. Jesse Marsh, though, big congratulations to him, because this definitely seemed like the plan, and we know the history with American coaches in Europe. You don't often get the opportunity, and you don't often get to stick around for very long if things don't go very well, but it seems like he will have the opportunity to have a little bit of, you know, a little bit of rope, let's call it.
And he's earned it.
Yeah, and he's going into a club, by the way, where he will not just have rope, but he'll have opportunities at the highest level. I think it's been like 7 straight years that, at the very least, Red Bull Salzburg have been in the CONCACAF, excuse me, there's habits right there, have been in the UEFA Champions League, at least the qualifying round.
Yeah.
At least the opportunity to somehow get to the group stage. I mean, this was the plan, and it paid off. Congratulations to Jesse Marsh.
Congrats, Jesse. I got my first cap with Jesse Marsh in 2007. So to see him go from player, professional player, to coach, and how much he's worked at his craft to become a good coach and understand the ins and outs of coaching, and then to take that leap and go across the seas and into Germany and coach there at the highest level and understand, okay, I have to learn a new language. I have to learn philosophy and how to connect with the German player. It's very respectable, and I wish him the best.
It's awesome. And, you know, the way I tend to follow European soccer is I follow the clubs where American players are at. Now I have a club to follow where an American coach is at.
Yep, in Austria. Congratulations to Jesse Marsh. It is mailbag time. 401-206-0MLS is the Hot Take Hotline. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com is the email. Tyler Maybe, though, hit us up on Twitter. He says there are a couple Game of Thrones MLS connections. I know Charlie came in the office today and was not happy about the first episode.
Not happy.
Here's what Tyler had to say. He says, Atlanta are the Martell family. So the translation here, like, you know, got some money, they throw it around, generally successful because...
Isn't that the Tyrells?
That's the Tyrells.
That's the Tyrells, yeah.
Yeah, I've just outed myself as a Game of Thrones noob. Here's the reason... Oh, no, he followed up. Now I get it. It's because he likes Atlanta as Dorne. They weren't in the show that long, but they made a huge impact. You know, Atlanta's been around for 2+ years at this point. And Joseph Martinez, he says, is 100% Oberyn Martell. After hitting the highest highs and celebrating with a contract extension, the Mountain, aka CCL, takes his legs out from underneath him and finishes him. The Mountain is CCL, I think, is maybe the best equivalent we got here.
I think that's unquestionable.
Who is now Gregor.
Right. Yeah. Crew, he says, are the Starks. Originals from way back have had some tough times that it looks like are probably turning the corner and on the come up.
I guess so, but like, given the whole thing about the North, shouldn't it be Toronto FC or...
No, they're not an original.
Well, I mean, you could say they're Montreal then, because Montreal actually predates MLS.
Well, we have
Montreal. Someone else.
We have Montreal here. It's the Wildlings, I assume, because they're up in the frozen north above the
beyond the wall.
Wall, yeah. LA Galaxy are the Lannisters, which I feel like is that's pretty spot on.
Yeah, that one's correct. Yeah.
LAFC though are the Tyrells. So kind of the newcomers that forced their way into the game and splash a little cash and have some wherewithal.
I don't think LA is about to do to LAFC what the Lannisters did to the Tyrells.
Probably not. No. Houston, he says, are the Targaryens.
Mm-hmm.
But you were saying DC may be more of the Targaryen.
Right? Like a glorious past and then sort of disappear for 20 years and then you come back and maybe have a
couple dragons.
Yeah.
You've rebuilt.
About dragons.
Uh-huh. So Rooney is a dragon? Or?
I guess.
Well, maybe the stadium is part of that. I don't know. Colorado or Knights of the Vale? We'll just leave it there. Orlando or the Faceless Men? He says San Jose or the Night's Watch, but Juan says that Colorado are actually the Night's Watch and RSL are the Wildlings because they're in constant conflict.
What didn't you like about the episode?
There wasn't...
No spoilers.
No spoilers. There was not that major moment that I'm like, no, nah! I want that every single episode. I want to be like, what just happened? Like, that was crazy. Mm-hmm. And not like a buildup.
Okay.
Don't give me any buildups or info.
Gotcha.
You prefer long ball with your...
Go direct.
Direct. I want a goal every series.
Yeah,
okay?
Right to Zlatan. Get into Zlatan, man. Let's talk a little Houston quickly. Eric in Fort Worth hit us up here. He says Houston are facing their toughest test, speaking of Zlatan of the Galaxy, on Friday. He says the attack is clicking. He's not worried about Elise or Manotas. He thinks that's all good. His question is about the midfield. Vera has fit into the system very well. He's looked like a third center back at times. Do they put on a mostly healthy Cabezas in front of Boniac, who's been playing an important role? He says he would worry about rust in Cabezas' case, but he's happy, though, because it doesn't seem like Houston are completely Cabezas-dependent, which it kind of seemed like they were last year.
They were last year, and they're not anymore, and that's a huge step forward for this team. I think Kiki Struner has been really good for them at the back as well, but as for how you arrange that midfield, I think they have something that's been working. So you don't want to go away from it for this particular game, which, as he pointed out, is their toughest test since that Tigres series. Houston's taking care of business over the past month. They've had 5 games, 4 wins, and a draw. They have had the easiest schedule in the league. 4 games at home. Their only road game was at Colorado, a team we know is struggling. Plus, it's a bad matchup for the Dynamo as well. This is one to watch with interest because I think Houston are good. I don't trust it yet.
Good early season game to get a little bit of a litmus test for Wilmer Cabezas and, excuse me, Cabezas. Too many Cabezas here. Wilmer Cabrera and the Dynamo. Anonymous via the Hot Take Hotline. If Zlatan continues at this rate, scoring a significant amount of his goals from the spot, does that affect a potential MVP candidacy? A goal is a goal for sure, but this anonymous folks, who, by the way, put your name in, please, says penalties shouldn't count as much in awards conversations, although it wasn't a discussion for Joseph last year. Does it matter? Would it matter to you as an MVP voter, Charlie?
It would matter to me if I was a player and let's say I scored 23 goals, none of them were penalties, and I'm going up against someone who has 28 goals or 30 goals and have scored 12 penalties. Like, I'm looking at it as I didn't have any gimme goals. I earned all my goals. Maybe you earned and got the foul and that led to the penalty, but those are penalty kick goals. I'd be outraged.
So BWP maybe last year on the Charlie train of thought is saying, hold on, boys, because I'm not.
Yeah, especially if your team is top of the table. BWP has every right to say, hey, where was my name in the conversation? We were supporter shield champions, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not being talked about?
I think it's fair. When here, Jonathan Cranendonk. What do you think the top 5 stadiums in MLS are, guys? He says Orlando's number 5, BBVA Compass is 4, Providence Park is 3, BMO is 2, and Red Bull Arena, when full, is number 1. There are some obvious missing stadiums there. Yeah. As someone who's been around a good amount, I would say Kansas City has to be there. Bank of California would have to be in that conversation as well. I mean, it depends on how you're defining soccer specific, but Mercedes-Benz is an absolute party. It is legit.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously now Allianz Field is, if not at the top, very, very close to it. There's some others you can mix in. I like Avaya. I do like BMO. I think BC Place is cool. What would be your number like 1 through 3? What comes like jumps out to you?
You're
going to anger whoever.
No, I mean, it's tough. Like, honestly, I kind of like them all. I remember when every MLS game was played in front of 8,000 people in an 80,000 seat stadium. I like, it's like, for me, it's like asking me to choose between my kids all soccer-specific stadiums are beautiful, and there's nothing better than watching the atmosphere at these places. I do kind of agree, though, with the idea that Red Bull Arena, when it's full, it holds sound so well, and it becomes, I mean...
That's number one for me.
Yeah.
Really?
Red Bull Arena, when full, in the playoffs, when it was full, it felt like Europe. And we had 2,000 fans come out behind the goal, and they were there for pregame when we were warming up. And I looked up, and I thought, this is as good as it gets. You don't dream of playing in a better atmosphere for an MLS game.
Allianz Field, Minnesota fans, I'm sure they felt that this weekend. It was such a blast to hang out with all of you. Thank you to anybody who said hi or hollered at me. That is like...
Did you get heckled at all?
I did not get heckled. It's Minnesota nice, man.
Come on.
There's no heckling. It's all just, hi, hey, Andrew, thank you for
not
coming.
Yet. Not
thank
yet.
Thank you for coming. Maybe that'll be next time because I kind of jinxed him with the draw. Maybe that's giving myself a little too much credit. Big thanks to Taylor Twelman. Thanks to you guys. Charlie Davies, Matt Doyle. We'll be back here on Thursday with Sam Stashkill, the Bird Dogs. Final flight on Extra Time. We're getting out of here. We'll see you later, everybody.